Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast, joining you once again in the midst of March Madness. The Wisconsin Badgers getting set for their Big Ten tournament debut. That'll be on Friday at the United Center in Chicago. They have the number four seed. They pulled it out. They got a top four seed in the Big Ten tournament. They will await their foe. And then, of course, right around the corner, the big dance, Selection Sunday. You can have some green beverages as you watch the brackets unfold before your eyes on St. Patrick's Day. That is Selection Sunday, and the Badgers will learn where they play next. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Badgers podcast. We're going to be chatting real quickly here with Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter. He's already in Chicago getting set to watch the full-fledged Big Ten tournament. The Badgers will probably face, Maryland, but Maryland is the fifth seed, so that's potentially that first round matchup. And then after that, they will potentially face Michigan State, the top seed in the draw in the semifinals if Wisconsin gets that far. It'll be some challenging games here, and the United Center won't alter their seed line most likely very much, looking at either a four seed or a five seed in the NCAA tournament, and their opponent, again, will be unveiled on Sunday. They're going to go back to that, just unveiling the bracket piece by piece instead of the alphabetical thing they did last year. I don't know if you remember that. That was weird. Didn't go well. A lot of people were upset about it, but we're back to sort of more of the status quo this year, so that's something you can look forward to. If you have not already done so, followed us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher, please do so. Subscribe, review us, rate us, let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter if that's your preferred method of communication. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Jeff Patricus is on Twitter. You can find him easily. Let him know what you think of the podcast. We will definitely make an effort to give you another one before the big dance gets underway. If not with Jeff, perhaps we'll go another route to preview the big matchup, whatever it may be, as we get prepared for the two best days on the sports calendar, that Thursday, Friday, the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. But we got a lot to talk about. Big Ten awards were handed out, a couple crazy finishes to close out the year. The Badgers really needed like one of four things to go right, and they would have gotten that fourth and top four spot, the final spot, to get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament. You know, they could have used Maryland losing their final game. That didn't happen. Purdue losing their final game. That didn't happen. Michigan beating Michigan State. That didn't happen. So it did come down to Wisconsin needing a win in their finale Sunday over Ohio State. They built a 22-point lead with 7 minutes to go and somehow needed overtime to win. It was insanity. It was crazy. Everybody's freaking out, but the Badgers did find a way to pull it out in overtime. Sort of a head scratcher, kind of just how the Badgers have been this season. Things just they've had weird lulls, and certainly that was an all-timer, but it did not end up costing them. They got that top four spot, and now they can hopefully make a little bit of a run here toward a Big Ten title. This is a team good enough to win the Big Ten title. Make no mistake about it. They could win three games in Chicago. So we'll see how it plays out. Without further ado, let's bring in Jeff. And here now is Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Wisconsin Badgers. He'll be in Chicago all week as the Badgers prepare for their Friday battle in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. Don't know the opponent yet. Potentially could be fifth-seeded Maryland, as the Badgers did get one of those top four seeds. And Jeff, before we get looking ahead, wanted to look back at the regular season finale at Value City Arena, Ohio State, with a very interesting outcome to close the year. The Badgers do get the victory in overtime after blowing a significant lead in the second half. I guess I'm just curious what you were thinking as that game unfolded and kind of what your takeaways are. If you see it as a win is a win is a win, or you see it as a situation where the Badgers really have to play better down the stretch. They're such a good defensive team. It's weird to see any team go on a big run like that. What were your takeaways from that kind of crazy regular season finish?
Well, actually, the run that Ohio State went on, which was, they were down by 23 with about 16 minutes left, down by 22 with about 8 left. It was really precipitated by some poor offense by Wisconsin. They either had turnovers, they would rush a shot, attack too soon. You know, we were joking at one point, they basically could have taken a knee in terms of shot clock violations for like 6 possessions, and they would have been better off than some of the things they did by rushing shots and turning over against the press, and that allowed Ohio State to get out into the open court. So the defense wasn't as good, but it was mostly because of poor offense. So, because the defense was very good for the majority of that game. Now, Ohio State's a team at the time didn't have Caleb Wesson, who will be playing in the Big Ten tournament, but and they had struggled offensively. So, you know, the takeaway for the players and the coaches was, you know, we did good things for about 33 minutes, got away some things offensively, which gave Ohio State some momentum. But probably the most important thing was, usually in a situation like that, when you blow a double-digit lead and have to go into overtime, you might lose that game in overtime. They were fortunate to regroup and outplay Ohio State in the five-minute overtime.
You look at the Iowa game, another great defensive performance as well. And that's one of those rare games, Iowa, where the Badgers won convincingly. It seemed like we were headed to that with Ohio State before the tables turned at the end. Do you get the sense the team is frustrated with the, I mean, they have been winning games, but they haven't, you know, they've been ugly, I guess you could say. Do they feel like there's another gear that they have yet to really hit? Or is this just, have they sort of accepted that this is their identity? They're going to win ugly. Penn State, another example. They're going to gut out victories. Is that kind of what their mentality is? Or do they feel like they have sort of not quite performed as well on offense as they'd like to?
Yeah, their identity is very simple. They're arguably the best defensive team in the Big Ten if you look at league play only. They're tied for fifth now again in fewest turnovers per game at 9.5, and just nationally, not in the Big Ten. And their offense has been uneven. Now, if you look at that Ohio State game, that was probably a microcosm of what they've done offensively this year. And it was similar to what happened at Maryland really early in the year, where you had a stretch to start this. They were in comfortable position at halftime with a 10-point lead. They were incredibly efficient offensively for a really good chunk of the second half. And then they started doing some things that were uncharacteristic offensively, and then that gave Ohio State momentum. So they know that they've got to be more consistent offensively, and part of that means getting to the free throw line more. And if you get to the free throw line to be more consistent from there, it's just that their top two free throw shooters are probably their least consistent guys in Happ and Iverson. So they know they're a defensive team that takes care of the ball, that gives them a chance to win. They play good offense. If they play good offense, consistent offense, they have a chance to beat anybody in the league.
This is the third podcast in a row that I want to talk a little about Khalil Iverson. He's had back-to-back double-doubles, and you hear a lot the phrase, a player who has his best basketball ahead of him, that refers to a younger player who's, you know, still getting better. I'm a little bummed that Iverson's career is coming to an end here, because the way he's played lately, it feels like actually his best basketball is in front of him. I guess I'm just curious what your impression is of him down the stretch here. I feel like this is a not necessarily a new version of Iverson, but certainly Iverson as good as we've seen him in a Wisconsin uniform. And now I have to think he's a crucial guy for this postseason run. I think he's going to wind up being that number two guy in key situations.
Well, he's a crucial guy, definitely in terms of defense and rebounding. That he's been giving him that, you know, last year is when he really blossomed into a really good on-ball defender. This stretch that he's on in terms of being able to attack off the bounce, because he hasn't been a great ball handler in his time. He's done a better job handling the ball, not going into areas where it can be stripped or he can lose it. So he hasn't been reckless with the ball. And I think it probably began with the Illinois game, because Illinois, what they like to do is really get out and pressure you. And it gives players either you can make a backdoor cut and attack, or you can attack off the bounce, and there's not a lot of help always. And he's done that against Illinois, and that got him going a little bit, and he's just continued it. He had some moves against Ohio State, against a couple of good defensive players, where he attacked off the bounce and either just got all the way to the rim straight, or drop step, spin move, and attacked through two defenders, and finished with his offhand, his left hand, that were just, they were moves of a guy who, the type of offensive player you say, we can ride that guy. If we need a basket, we can go to him, which has never been his forte. And he's just very confident right now. He feels that he can go against anybody. Now, one caveat, teams that have length, I mean big guys, down low and at the basket, can give him trouble, because as athletic as he can be, he's still only about 6'5". And he has run into that lately, but it's not going to deter his confidence. He's making good decisions with the ball, attacking and finishing. And if he gives them that whether it's Big Ten tournament, NCAA tournament, that gives them another weapon, because it's helped kind of soften the blow because the guards haven't been scoring as much.
I have a hunch about another guy that we've seen play as good as ever, Brevin Pritzel. He had certainly a moment in that Penn State game at the Kohl Center and has been hitting big shots. It actually kind of started when you wrote about him as being a dependable reserve at jsonline.com. It looks like a prescient article now, because he really sort of hit his stride and became a guy that you could go to for a three-point shot just about any time. Do you think, as we get into the postseason, I mean, I kind of have this hunch that he's going to be a guy who hits a couple really big shots in the postseason. Is he a guy who's going to be on the floor in crunch time, the final minutes of a game, to be that sniper?
I think there are three guys who have that capability off the bench: Pritzel, Kobe King, and Ford. And those guys have done it on different nights against different teams during the regular season. And it would be an ideal world for the coaching staff if all three of those guys, or two of them even, did it consistently. But it hasn't always been that way. Pritzel's probably been the most consistent of the three. King and Ford have been more up and down. In fact, I talked to Kobe King and wrote a story about that that'll run later this week, that he is one of the key guys because he hasn't been as consistent. He has as much upside as anybody, not only on their bench, but in their top rotation. And he's kind of following a similar path that he did when he was in high school, where it took him a while to become aggressive and not defer to so many people. And he's shown that he can be that guy who helps them both defensively and offensively. But any of the three, they need to help. And like I said, ideally, if you get two or three going at the same time, that gives the coaching staff consistent options off the bench. Right now it's been, okay, Pritzel's playing well, we're going to ride him tonight. Okay, it's King right now, or King and Ford, or Ford and Pritzel. It's been nice to have those options, but those guys need to be more consistent.
The Big Ten awards were handed out this past week. Not a lot of Badgers mentioned, but you did see Ethan Happ. No surprise there. First team All-Conference, third year that he's made the All-Conference list, and capping a really incredible career at Wisconsin. He was honored on Senior Night, of course. I think we've asked a variation of this question before, but when you think back on Ethan Happ's legacy or his career at Wisconsin, I'd wonder what maybe sticks out. Maybe it's a moment or two. Maybe it's just a production. Maybe it's the fact that he is unlike so many players that you see now in college basketball. I guess what do you think when you 5 years from now when you hear the name Ethan Happ, what are you going to think of?
Oh, there's three different things. One, the numbers. The numbers speak for themselves. You know, top 3 to 5 in so many different categories. That basically displays or illustrates his versatility, all the ways he can help teams win. The other thing would be how much he's changed off the court, because he was a really quiet kid, was not a demonstrative leader type at all through the early stages. Now, part of that was he was playing with veterans, guys like Nigel Hayes, Bronson Koenig early, you know, Vito, Shoei, guys like that. So he didn't have to leave. And then the third thing would be, and he's talked about this recently, that when they didn't make the NCAA tournament last year, he said that ate at him, mostly because he felt he let down, as he described, the alumni, in particular guys he played with. Because he said, I came with a lot of guys, they showed me the ropes, but they did put in a lot of hard work to keep the NCAA tournament streak going. And when it was my turn to kind of lead that group, take the reins, he said, we weren't able to get it done. And that really bothered him. So that'll be the third thing, because obviously they're locked. They're probably at worst going to be a 5 if they don't have a good Big Ten tournament, but they're a solid 4 and perhaps a 3 in the NCAA tournament.
The Player of the Year award went to Cassius Winston from Michigan State. Not a controversial pick, really, although, if you follow KenPom, Ethan Happ is one of the best players in the country, if not the best player in the country. So I thought maybe Ethan Happ would get some consideration. As you've seen everybody in the Big Ten, I actually think Jordan Murphy, who's a second-team All-Conference player, deserves a little more thought in this conversation, too. But who would you say is the best player in the Big Ten, in your estimation?
Well, the Player of the Year was Winston. I mean, he did so many things for that team. In particular, once they lost Langford and then once they lost Ward, he kept that team together to get them to Michigan State to win a share of the title. And probably the most important game was the last regular season game. He showed his value because Michigan had them on the ropes. They were up 12 in the first half, fairly late. Michigan State made a little bit of a run, got to 6 at halftime, and then Winston just took over in the second half and Winston was a far better player than Xavier Simpson was for Michigan's team, their point guard, and that was the difference in that game. And Winston makes that offense go. He can hurt teams in so many ways. So I don't think anyone was surprised that he won Player of the Year.
Going to ask you about Nick Ward again in a second. He could be back here. It sounds like he will be back for the Big Ten tournament. No Badgers named to the all-defensive team. We talked about how good their defense has been this year. And then again, I don't know if there's an individual that I feel like got snubbed from Wisconsin. How did you see that? Was there anybody that you thought from the Badgers deserved to be on that all-defensive team, or is it just too much of a group effort there?
I thought Iverson probably would have been the most likely candidate simply because if you watch the type of guys they've had him defend, it's been point guards, a quick guard like from Carson Edwards to wings who are tall, lanky, can shoot from the outside or post up inside. Coffee from Minnesota with those guys. Vic Law from Northwestern, they have used him on a variety of different guys who can beat you in a variety of different ways. And for the most part, he's been able to keep those guys under control where they haven't gone off and carried their team to a victory against Wisconsin just by going against Iverson. Now, it's more than one guy having to defend because you need help on screens, things like that. But his work against a variety of different players is probably the thing that jumped out. Now, all defensive teams, a lot of times voters will look at numbers, steals, blocks, whatever. And so Iverson didn't have those numbers, and Hap had a ton of steals a couple years ago when he was on the all-defensive team, but he didn't make it either. And he's a guy who can guard basically any position on any place on the floor when he switches out of the screen.
The Badgers will again play on Friday at the United Center in Chicago in the first round, or rather the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament. It'll be their first game. They're the 4 seed. They could face the 5th seed, Maryland. A good matchup. The two teams split during the regular season. Maryland's going to get there would have to beat either Rutgers or Nebraska. Assuming it's going to be Maryland, what do you think of that matchup? That's two teams that seem pretty even to me.
Well, the two games were really entertaining. Maryland jumped out to a big lead, led by as many as 21 in the second half. Wisconsin came back and actually took the lead in the last 2 minutes, wasn't able to hold on. And then the game in Madison, it was not a big depth or a big margin for either team for a while, but Wisconsin made plays down the stretch to pull away and win by double digits. So I think it'll be an entertaining game. It'll be interesting to see, say, for Wisconsin, Maryland, does Maryland have an edge by getting one game under its belt? Are they sharper early than if Wisconsin, say, if Wisconsin comes out and looks a little ragged on offense and takes a while to get going? That, to me, would be one key to watch for, no matter who Wisconsin would play.
If Wisconsin wins that game, they would go to the Saturday semifinals, possibly, most likely, against Michigan State, the top seed in the draw. Of the three teams that are kind of in that top tier, Michigan, Michigan State, and Purdue, I thought Michigan State was probably the toughest matchup for Wisconsin. Nick Ward, supposedly, like we said, coming back for the tournament. He'll have a game under his belt before he would meet in this theoretical matchup with the Badgers. What jumps out if that matchup comes to pass? Are there things the Badgers can do to beat Michigan State?
Well, actually, the matchup I would be curious to see before that would be, does Indiana get past Ohio State in the first round and upset Michigan State? Because Indiana beat Michigan State twice during the regular season. Now, Nick Ward comes back. How effective is he? I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. How well can he use his left hand? What's his conditioning like? So it'll be really interesting to see. And Tom Izzo has already said coming into the tournament, kind of curiously, that, well, it'll be nice to win the title, but it's we got the regular season title. We just need to work on some things for our team to get us ready for the NCAAs. So Indiana's a desperate team. They play Ohio State. That's kind of like a playing game to get into the NCAAs. I think if Indiana plays Michigan, or Michigan State, excuse me, I would not be shocked to see Indiana advance and perhaps face Wisconsin. And those two teams met once, and Indiana won in double overtime. But Wisconsin can beat any of those teams. But they'd have a tough matchup with Purdue because Purdue was able to use some things. Carson Edwards hurt them. Their freshman post really hurt them. And Michigan beat them in Ann Arbor, probably with a little combination of defense and Charles Matthews really going off in the second half. But Matthews has been hurt. So it's a wide open field. I'm curious to see if Wisconsin gets past the first one, who they really will play.
Indiana, of course, has the added incentive of winning the thing is going to get them in the tournament. That's not a sure thing right now. They're one of the many teams on the bubble as we head into the final throes of championship week. The Badgers, we know for sure they'll be in the tournament. Like you said, probably a solid four. Maybe they dip to a five, but they are certainly in the tournament. Let's say the Badgers, maybe they win a couple games here in the Big Ten tournament. Maybe they win a game in the NCAA tournament. Maybe they don't. Have the Badgers reached a stage coming off a year when they did not advance to the postseason beyond the Big Ten tournament? Just getting there to the dance, would you consider that a successful season, or does more have to happen before you think the Badgers, members in the Badgers program will be really happy with how things went in 2019?
Well, the players won't be happy unless they're in Minnesota for the Final Four.
Sure, yeah.
They think they're capable of doing that. It's been successful in this regard to this point. They were a train wreck last year in terms of inexperience and injuries. So that was an anomaly. And anyone who thought, oh my God, this is now a trend coming, I think you should see that this year proves that it wasn't a start of a trend last year. They finished in the top four, two games out of the lead, that they're back. The program is on solid footing. Now, postseason will be judged by, do you have, if you go one and out in the Big Ten and one and out in the NC2As, I think that really, in terms of the big picture, a lot of people, including inside the program, will say, no, we should have done better than advance, than have just two postseason games. They expect to have more than two postseason games. So those are their expectations, and I think that's how they should be judged.
I watched a team like Northeastern win their conference tournament on Tuesday night. That's a team that shoots a lot of threes, shoots them well, doesn't let possessions get too deep into the shot clock. And I kind of think that's a team that would be a little scary for the Badgers. I guess I've kind of asked a variation of this question before too, but as you watch some of these championship games, are there signs, things that you might see from a mid-major team, a potential 12 or 13 seed that you think would particularly give this Badgers team problems in the NCAA?
Well, Wisconsin actually does a really good job defending three-pointers. They do a good job running guys off the line and making teams take tough twos. So I don't know if that quality in and of itself is going to scare them. And if teams are taking quick shots and not hitting threes, that plays right into Wisconsin's hands because they'll come down and grind you up offensively. The type of teams that, if you look at who Wisconsin's played, have been able to, for example, let's take a Western Kentucky, which was that was their Super Bowl because of what had happened last season, how that game ended. But they got to the rim consistently. Wisconsin's defense broke down. So guard penetration, attacked the rim, broke down the defense, and they were able to score inside and outside. So any team that's capable, probably with really quick guards, of disrupting Wisconsin's defense by disrupting the integrity, breaking that down, will cause problems. But if Wisconsin, generally, what their offense does, if they run good offense, if they get good shots, and if they turn it over, it's not a live ball turnover, that allows them to set their defense and make them better. So a team that can really beat them in the half court with penetration, maybe turn them over more than they're accustomed, or a team that has really good post defense and maybe gives Ethan Happ and or Khalil Iverson problems, so they aren't able to be effective, and then Wisconsin doesn't play as well inside or out.
He once again is Jeff Patricus. Read everything he has to say about the Wisconsin Badgers at jsonline.com. He'll be in Chicago at the United Center for the Big Ten tournament, and then wherever Wisconsin goes for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Find him on Twitter as well. Thanks for joining us, Jeff. We will hopefully chat with you again before the big dance begins. Thanks again.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
That's what we got for today. Thanks to Jeff Patricus. We will join you again next week in some capacity to talk about the NCAA tournament, the draw, who the Badgers are facing, what the bracket looks like, where they're going, all the good stuff. So tune in next week. Again, find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher or at jsonline.com. You can find all of Jeff Patricus's writings there. He'll be covering the Badgers wherever they go. And you can also find myself. I got plenty of stuff up there as well. Some potential first round foes that either Wisconsin or Marquette could be facing. We should talk a little Marquette maybe even on the next podcast. I know that Not supposed to have Marquette and Wisconsin in the same room with each other. I get it, but maybe since we don't have another Marquette podcast, maybe we can discuss the tournament at large. Talk about some of the Wisconsin players that are going to be in it: Tyler Harrow, Jordan Poole of Michigan. There's a few guys on the mid-major team: Storm Murphy of Wofford. They're going to be maybe a sixth seed, one of the higher mid-major seeds you'll see. So that's a potential interesting storyline to follow. They've had a crazy good year, and a few others as well who snuck in here. North Dakota State's got a couple guys with Wisconsin ties. Iowa State does as well. So we can talk about all that. I think that'll be kind of fun, and we will do that next week. But until then, thanks for joining us. For Jeff, I'm J.R. Radcliffe. We will catch you again soon. Hope you enjoy the rest of Championship Week and Selection Sunday.